everybody, and welcome to Comedy Death Star, the podcast that digs into the dark side of comedy. I'm your host, Denzel Myers. My guest this week is writer-performer Lyra Lynn Kay. Did I say that right?
You did.
Oh, pretty close. Here to talk about her play, Many Trump Refugees in One Body. Happening as part of the Hollywood Fringe Festival this June 2018. That's today, right? Today's June 1st?
Holy cow.
We're going to chat all about that and more in a moment. But first, a message from our corporate overlords. Comedy Death Star is a production of Actors Comedy Studio and ACSDigital.tv. I'm Denzel Myers. My guest today is writer-performer Lyra Lynn Kay. Hello and hello.
Hi.
How's it going?
Good. Right? Yeah.
So, you were just saying a minute ago, you just got here. You just got to Los Angeles. Many Trump Refugees in One Body. We should just start talking about that. Let me say first, it's at the Broadwater Studio Theater. The address is 1078 Lillian Way in Hollywood. You must have been there now.
I go there right after
this. So you haven't even been there
yet. I haven't even been there yet. I'm doing tech today.
Okay, well, there you go. Thanks for coming in. Many Trump Refugees in One Body. What's going on? What is this show?
I had a very strong reaction to the election of Donald Trump. And immediately after it was confirmed that he would be president, I convinced my partner to put our condo on the market and try to move to Canada. So it's about my immigration journey to Canada, and it's a lot harder to get in. Like, you can't just move there. They examine every single part of your life, and it's a really funny and difficult story, you know?
And where were you living when you decided, okay, it's time to go?
Boston.
You were living in Boston, and you're like, all right, immediately. Because a lot of people said, I'm going to move to Canada, but not many people really did, but you did.
Yeah,
you're trying.
Yeah. I lived there for 5-6 months last year.
Okay.
And then I came back because I wasn't allowed to work.
Right.
And I ran out of money, so I came back to the States, and I'm self-employed, so I did a bunch of work and travel back and forth.
And back and forth. Now, politics aside, you know, people, we're having a big conversation here about people that come to this country, come illegally, you know, all that stuff, refugees, etc. I hate to say it, but it's hard to get into any other country.
Right.
Every other country in the world, if you're there and you're not there legally, you can't work, you don't go to school. I mean, somehow in this country, people think like, oh, you came here, you should be able to do whatever you want.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting conversation that borders are, if anything, becoming tougher to cross.
Yeah.
And nationalism is on the rise.
Yep.
And I'm not a strong nationalist. I've lived all over the world.
Yep.
And I like the idea that as long as you're not going to commit a crime, you can live wherever you want in the world.
That is a great idea.
You know?
But there's no other country. There are no countries that say that. I mean, including ours, there's no countries that are like, yeah, sure, come on over.
No, Canada, to give Canada every bit of credit that she deserves, Trudeau is making it easier and easier for people to immigrate.
Okay.
And Canada has such a strong commitment to diversity. So I found, you know, some of the questions that I was facing in immigration were prejudicial, but the Parliament is voting to change some of them. So I think
change some of those questions
to make them. There's medical inadmissibility. There's age. There's a bunch of. It's a point system, and you get points for different things. And they're getting rid of what they think is prejudicial.
Hmm. Now, you answered one of my questions already. No, you haven't quite made it to live in Canada, legally work there, you know, you're still working on it.
18 months later.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned about the points system. You lost a few points for your multiple personality issue.
Yeah. Well, that's the question that was the deal breaker.
Yeah.
So it's the question on the form, this is a spoiler alert because this is the big reveal of my show.
Well, it was in your press release.
Yeah, I know. So the medical inadmissibility question is, have you ever had a serious illness or physical or mental disorder? And if you have, then can it, the reason the question is there is that you can be immediately rejected for being too much of a burden on the healthcare system.
Yes.
So for me, I never was hospitalized. I never was in a rehab. I never was on psychotropic drugs. So the issue, like, I can say, how am I a burden to your healthcare system? But the interesting thing is that's the question that Canada's looking at and saying this is prejudicial and they're considering getting rid of it. Mm-hmm. Which means, because I was like, I don't know if I can move to Canada or maybe anywhere if they're asking for medical releases. But now it looks like I can. So,
like can.
Yeah, so everything is back on the table, which is great.
So I saw in your materials that your whole life, your professional life as a writer or actor, whatever you've been doing, you've hidden from people your issue of your multiple personalities.
Yeah. I mean, this show was a very big deal because I ran a theater company. I ran a multicultural and diverse theater company for 10 years in Boston. I taught the Meisner technique in Boston. I was, for a good 7 of those years, the only one doing it. So I had a really high profile in my city.
Yeah.
And it's not something that you tell people professionally, right? And
I just think that nobody really knows what that means. Like, how has that been, what is it for you? How is it for you to have this issue in your life? I'm just super curious. Like, what is that like?
What is it like to be multiple?
Yeah. Because it's a thing that is so easily, like, I read it and I started laughing and I said, that's probably not the right response. But, you know, honestly, it's like a thing you want to joke about constantly, like the jokes start to write themselves.
So. Well, yeah, multiple jokes are so easy.
Yeah, they're totally, I don't even know what they are now, but there's
got, I mean, when I first found out and my partner would say, you know, I really don't like that you did that the other day, I'd be like, well, I wasn't the one who did it. You know, I mean, it's just this easy thing.
Yeah. So the question is, so what is it for you, and how did you, I'm curious how you even figured out that this was happening.
I had a therapist who gave me the book Rabbit Howls, which is by the 92 personalities of Trudy Chase.
Okay.
And I read the book and I really saw myself in it.
You did.
And I came back to therapy with the book in hand. I walked in the door and threw it on the floor and said, if you think I'm multiple, why don't you just say so? And she was freaked out, you know, because that wasn't what she was expecting.
But she did think so.
She thought so, not based on my behavior, but based on my history, you know, by my life history, my childhood history.
Yeah.
I think that there's, I'm going to explain this in, the most famous multiple is Sybil.
Yeah.
Right?
The movie in the 70s.
It was in the 70s, yeah. And Sybil and Trudy Chase, for that matter, another famous multiple. You know who else is a famous multiple? Gives us all a bad name? Roseanne Barr.
Is she?
She is.
I have seen nothing about that in the press.
Well, it's faded away, but she did come out as multiple maybe 15, 20 years ago.
All right.
Periodically people will mention it. So Sybil and Trudy Chase and like the famous multiples are famous partly because not only do they have personalities who take over.
Yes.
And when a personality takes over, your voice changes, your physicality changes, you really have a different personality very noticeably, right? Like everybody in the world has parts of themselves and roles that they play. But Trudy Chase and Sybil, when the personalities took over, they would lose time. So they would, in other words, whoever their main personality was, wouldn't know what happened.
Right. They would have a kind of blackout.
Blackouts are part of being multiple.
Yeah.
And I think, although I make a lot of jokes about that in my show.
Blacking out.
Well, yeah. I mean, I make jokes about it because I'm very lucky in that I don't have them.
Okay.
And really didn't have them after childhood, adolescence was over. So yeah, as a kid, yes, I did. But as an adult, I was able to pass as a single personality person, and part of that was not having blackouts.
Yeah.
So for me, It's, and at this stage in the game, which is some 30 years after I discovered that I was multiple, what it's like for me is that I have a lot of personalities of different ages commenting on what's going on in my head all the time. Sometimes they're really loud, sometimes they're in the background. Sometimes I'll be doing something that I'm supposed to be serious and I'll start laughing because of something that a five-year-old personality is saying about it, you know? So I have that, and I can, and I think that I've said about the show, I don't think people, because I'm an actor and I am a character actor who can play different characters, I don't think people realize how unusual it is to be able to have your personalities come out at will and have them also stay back at will.
So you have that
ability. I have that ability.
But they're there, but you can let them come forward or not.
Right. And I can also say, yeah, no, not right now. You know, so that's...
So do you use that in your acting?
I do. Of course I do.
What a fantastic.
It's a great tool.
Yeah.
I mean, and it... I was very, I once got cast as a ditz, and I'm like, you know, I'm an activist, I'm an intellectual, and I, when they called me and offered me the role, I was like, did no one else come to audition? You know, it's like, like you did meet me, you know, and I was like, okay, well, I have to find this role. And for me, it's almost like a card catalog. It's like, so anybody interested in this role? You know, who feels like they could play a ditz? And my partner, of course, said, oh, I don't think you're going to have any problem with that because she knows me so well.
A lot of confidence.
Yeah.
So just now you said, oh, you can say, well, does anybody want to play this role? You really have that kind of relationship with the other personalities in there, and you can talk to them, and they talk to you, and you can work together?
Yeah, that's, I mean, that was, you know, the goal of healing or recovery for multiples used to be to integrate, to become a single personality person.
Yes.
That's no longer the goal.
Okay.
The goal is being joined and co-conscious, which means having a really good relationship with your other personalities, and where it's like a huge family where everybody cares about each other.
Yeah.
And I do have that, and I worked really friggin' hard for it, you know.
Yeah.
I love them. I think they're hysterical and awesome.
Do they all get along with each other?
Most of the time.
Yeah.
Of course, I mean,
it's like any family.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Now, I do some work as a life coach, and I have done this kind of an exercise with my clients on occasion, because we all have multiple voices in our heads that are telling us different things, critical voices, but they're not all the same. And we usually don't examine them consciously. We let them live in a peripheral area. And so, you know, in one case, for example, we created a board of directors for this person. And, you know, the main guy was the chairman of the board, and he had, you know, six or seven or eight other board members that had different interests, different fears, different voices. We went through, I made them, you know, I said, well, physically, what does this person look like, this person? And he had answers for that stuff. It was not a multiple personality person, but sorting this out for him was a great tool, right? And later, if he was in a tough spot and being self-critical, and I could say, well, whose voice is that? And he would say, oh, it's not this guy, it's not this guy, it's this one. And even though some of them were critical, we also identified, well, what is it this person really cares about? What's the good in this shitty thing that they tell you about yourself? What are they trying to protect you? Or are they trying to, they're doing something that they think is a good thing. Can we identify what that is? So it sounds like kind of the same.
It is. I'm like, do you know about internal family systems?
I've heard about internal family
systems. You just described internal family systems. Yeah.
I mean, I, you know, dabbled, but, you know, I figured, hey, we can use this. There's also a great book that a guy wrote called Taming Your Gremlin. And he's a psychologist and he has done this work. And his book, he talks about having clients where he gets them to draw and really figure out what is that one voice. So I figured, well, if there's one, there's probably other ones too. So right. His, you know, I worked off of his book and combined some family systems together, and you know,
I love that work so much, and it's my work. Yeah. When I first heard about internal family systems, which I call multiple therapy for non-multiples, you know.
Yeah. Because I'm sorry to interrupt. It wasn't invented or created for multiples. It was just for regular people walking around that have this kind of, you got a lot of stuff in your head. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Dick Schwartz, who invented it, lives in Boston.
Okay.
He read my show. He gave me a quote for the show. Uh-huh. He's a big supporter.
Yeah.
So it's great.
Sure he is.
Yeah, I know. And I do mention internal family systems, but when I heard about it, this woman was like, oh, you're multiple, you should do internal family systems. She told me about it, and I said, yeah, I think I have a graduate degree in that. But my partner has been looking, you know, she's like jealous of some of the ways that I get to know myself. Right. She'll love this. And, you know, now my partner's trained in it. And
That's cool. Now, I'm just going to ask, are you from Boston originally?
No.
Because you don't have an awful Boston accent.
Pack the con, Howard,
I don't have my awful Philadelphia accent. I've expunged it. Where are you from originally?
I'm from Cleveland, but I actually lived in Philadelphia for high school.
For high school?
Yeah.
I like to say anything good about Cleveland, because nobody says anything good really about Ohio in general. Cleveland, to me, is the best part of Ohio. Most interesting, you know, culturally. And, I mean, it's a beautiful state. It doesn't get much love, Ohio.
Yeah, I don't have much love for Ohio.
I understand.
But it is really beautiful. I mean, it is.
Yeah.
And I grew up watching the Cleveland Browns. I still have loyalty to them, which is very sad because they lost, I think, every game this year.
It's funny. I'm not a huge football fan, but when you said the Cleveland Browns, I wasn't even sure if they still existed. They're worse than the New York Jets.
Yes.
Yeah. Historically, like forever.
Well, when I was a kid, they were decent.
Okay.
And that was when they sometimes beat the Steelers, and that was in the heyday of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
That was a big deal. Yeah. The 70s Steelers thing.
Yeah.
Oof. Yeah. Now, anything else you want to say about the show? Because I got other questions about you and stuff and life. And
I mean, just the show combines the immigration story and my partner and I, who, and kind of our story around immigration, which we've been together, it'll be 31 years next week. And she hates change of any kind, and I love risk. So, you know, she was like, I just want to keep my job at Harvard. And I was like, I'm leaving right now. So that story is in there. And also the story of what it's like to have a secret and then be put in a corner to either lie or tell the truth. Right. So am I going to keep my integrity?
Right.
And maybe lose the opportunity to move to this really wonderful place, you know, or am I going to lie? Obviously, I'm not lying because I've gone public.
You're doing a whole show about it.
Yeah.
Well, with you and your partner, it makes sense that you're together. She doesn't like risk or change, and so that's why she needs you.
Yeah.
And vice versa.
Exactly.
You know? But maybe without her, you would be flying off the handle, swinging from the chandelier. People, and 31 years, that's great.
Yeah.
So obviously, yeah.
Yeah.
Something.
No, I love her a lot.
I was going to say ask one more question about the multiple personality thing. What about the jokes? Have you had any favorite jokes about that people have made? Any jokes that you especially hate? Like, oh, this is a really insensitive multiple joke. It's just a genre I'm not familiar with.
Yeah, no, jokes. I mean, I'm not sure that I might be inventing this genre. I think people are really careful because they're worried about being offensive. Do you know what I mean? So,
you mean not the president or some other people? But
no,
yeah, there
no.
Are,
but I mean the people who come to see the show and the interviews I've done, and I do this thing in the show, which is it's a comedy FAQ, and a lot of the multiple jokes are in there, because the FAQ is taken from the questions that I have been asked when I do tell people, the people in my life, and they almost always ask the same questions.
I've probably did too, right?
No,
I
you
did
didn't.
Different ones. Okay.
Well, if you've known somebody, I mean, that, you know, when I did the show in Boston,
yeah.
And I didn't want to open there because I knew it would be hard for people who had put me on a pedestal or looked up to me.
A lot of people came to see you and had no idea. So they pooped themselves. I mean, you know, they had a reaction in the, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
And some of them were, oh my God, I feel so much closer to you. And,
sure.
You know, some of them were that. Some of them were like, I just need to get out of here and go have a drink,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it was freaky for them. But when I tell somebody, and they've known me for 5 years, and they haven't figured it out, they have no idea,
right.
They often get scared. Because there's a stigma, and they think, they don't think like Sybil, they think The Exorcist. It's like, oh my God, is her head gonna spin around? Like,
yeah.
Who am I talking to right now?
Yeah.
And like, you've known me for 5 years.
Yeah. No, yeah. I
you
mean,
know? So, but
I, yeah, yeah. I think it's a thing that probably freaks people out because they don't know what it is. They don't know if they have any experience with it. They don't know what they're going to get. Or they, you know, it makes them
right.
Wonder who you are, if they can trust you.
All
yeah.
Of that.
Yeah,
yeah.
All of that. Which is why it's fascinating when you find somebody with 97. I mean, we can't. We're so involved with our identity, especially in this country. Like who I think I am and who I say I want to be. And, you know, I'm going to put myself out there and say what side of the lines I'm on, and to meet a person that doesn't either have the ability to do that or it's different or I can imagine that, yeah, it's difficult and you get a lot of weird responses.
Yeah, the jokes aren't weird, the questions are weird.
Okay.
And and I feel like because I've, you know, I'm like pretty happy, you know, with who I am, and I don't want to not be multiple.
Yeah, you seem happy.
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, the gift, there's so many gifts of multiplicity. For one thing, I do live with, you know, with personalities who have very different, I mean, the one thing that, here's a very, it's a hot topic in any conversation,
sure.
Right? Religion.
Yeah.
My younger kid personalities are Christians. My teenagers are atheists. And then I have like the Unitarians and the Buddhists, and it's like live and let live. What else can I do?
So they
right?
all have different religious.
Yeah.
And
different.
What about you?
I would say that I hold all of them
okay.
With a kind of eclectic understanding.
Yeah.
Right? And it was for a while I was trying to get agreement, and then I was just like, how about if we just all agree that anybody can think what they want to think
mm-hmm.
And not impose their viewpoint on somebody else?
Now, do any of your other personalities not want to move to Canada?
Yes, there are. There's.
Right now.
Yeah, I was.
Checking.
I just. I was like. I actually. That's like, what I. People are like. She's thinking. I'm like. No. I'm really kind of. I'm listening
yeah.
And asking. So I do have. I do have a few artists who are worried about moving to Canada.
Really.
Because my work is really edgy.
Yeah.
I mean, the show is edgy.
Sure.
But all my work is edgy in one way or another. You know, I haven't written about multiple personalities or performed about it before. But Canada has, I don't think Canadians would say this, but there is such a strong liberal understanding and a liberal consciousness.
Yes.
And everybody agrees. Like a very, and I'm talking about like in Toronto in the big
sure.
Cities, it's very liberal. I agree with everything they agree with. But I really feel like my job as an artist is to step outside that pool and poke at things and
absolutely.
Point things out.
Yeah.
And when I was in Canada, I had somebody say to me, you know, your art might be too edgy for Canada. And it really worried me because I want my voice to be heard. I don't want to go to a place where that's not going to happen. So I have, I would say, 3 or 4 personalities who are like...
concerned about that.
Am I going to get to be me?
Yeah.
In Canada.
Well...
Mind you, Canada is so amazing and... the tolerance, I mean, the social safety net. We literally are incapable of imagining a day-to-day life that feels that safe, especially now.
Yeah. And when you say liberal, it's not that everybody believes the same thing. It's that they're tolerant of a broader diversity of points of view. I mean, to me, that's what the liberalism in Canada is about. It's not that everybody is the same or believes the same thing. It's that they're willing to give you a break and let you be that and do that.
Yeah, I would say that if, you know, most liberals aren't tolerant of the full right, far right. That's true in Canada. But there's a lot more people with a liberal understanding in Canada. So,
well, the chaotic and destructive part of me wants to say, yeah, if people say your work might be too edgy for Canada, you're on brand. I mean, you're upsetting people already. you haven't even gotten there, and they're already saying this might be a little too much. I mean, that's what it is to poke at people, is to go too far.
Yeah.
That's what my show is about. Just listening to your show is not about anything on the surface that is the same. But what is at the heart of my show is not really needing to know who I am or where I'm headed. Because, I think the certainty is overrated and consciousness is overrated. And the ability to live in conflict and confusion is a higher order of being than knowing who you are and where you're going.
Yeah. Well, and just the question, who are you, asks you to be one-dimensional.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have a whole thing in the queer community that, it's certain parts of the queer community that gender is fluid, right? For some people, gender is fluid.
Yep.
Why can't identity be fluid?
Yeah.
Why do I have to be one thing?
Well, it is fluid, and we are different. You know, when you go home to see your family, if you're at a business meeting or if you're at a nightclub, you let different parts of you come forward.
Right, exactly.
We do that naturally without even thinking about it. And so, yeah, sometimes there are parts that people, if they saw that and they saw that, they wouldn't understand how those pieces went together. But they're both part of you, so not controversial. So we do this all the time.
Yeah.
But we think that the person who we think we are is the only thing and is the truth, which is silly to me.
And it's interesting to me, you know, one of the things, I used to teach creative writing, so I taught poetry and fiction, and then I became a slam poet and performer, and then I became an actor, and then I got an MFA, and so I taught the Meisner technique for 10 years, and teaching acting allowed me this kind of transparency where more of me, more of my personalities were involved, because I'm kind of modeling the spontaneity of the Meisner technique. And you can't be spontaneous if you're pretending you only have one personality, at least if you're me. So, but I find that authenticity of bringing more parts of who you are to the table allows people to connect with you so much more. So the more that we can do that in more areas of our lives, the more effective we are, the more of an impact we make. It's great. You know,
and I would also add, parts of me show up that I didn't know about, that I find surprising, and that is my favorite. That's my favorite.
Yes, absolutely.
And you must have that occasionally too. That parts of you show up that you didn't realize were there, or talents that you didn't realize were there, and you say, "Wow, okay, that's me. Fantastic."
Right.
Yeah. All right. Well. Let me see. What else? Here's another couple of questions. You recently were named a semi-finalist in the Blacklist Women in Film Award. What happens then? What happens with that? Is it like that and a quarter gets you a cup of coffee? What happens?
Yeah, that and a quarter gets you a cup of coffee. So it's very interesting because I've won a number of things, a number of prizes in different genres for writing, and then I've been a finalist and a semi-finalist. And the finalist and semi-finalist credits, most of the time, just make your resume look a lot better.
Okay.
Like, people think she's good.
Sure.
Well, right?
I'm asking about it, so it obviously worked for me.
Yeah, and then there are contests where you win money.
Yep.
And then there are contests where you win advocacy and networking. The Meryl Streep contest being, I won that in 2015. There were 12 winners. And they're still, I was in New York right before I was in the UK. I went down to New York for Tribeca because the administrators of the contest were introducing us to agents, managers, producers, directors.
So you're still getting
3 years later.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, it's great.
Right. That's good. So those things work. All right. How old were you when you first ran away from home?
The very first time I ran away from home? 14.
14. And what happened there? Was it an argument? You just decided it was time to go?
When I became a teenager, I went to battle with my mother over control of my life, okay. As many people do.
Sure.
And she wanted me to be a lifeguard because she had always wanted to be a lifeguard. And we had just moved to a new school. It's like my fourth grade school. I was making friends, and I just wanted to be with my friends. So I think I crawled out on the roof and hang dropped and then went to a friend's house for the day. Yeah. So I was gone. I wasn't even gone a full 24 hours that time.
So you didn't pack up like the little thing with the... your knapsack.
I had a bag with me, but you know, mostly what I packed was access to money, so savings accounts and cash, and I was just like, I'm going to go back to Ohio.
And so did that work? That's communicate. When kids run away, it's an effort to communicate. I mean, did that help anything or change it at all?
I would say it dramatically made my relationship with my father worse.
Yeah.
And it softened up my mother quite a bit.
All right.
So.
Now, I always have this other question, which is, when you were a child, you had an imaginary friend. They also had an imaginary friend. Where are they now? But with you, this is a totally different question than it usually is for people.
Right. Well, because I had friends who weren't imaginary. They were in there.
Yeah, and I don't recall, when did you start to experience this?
I can't ever remember not being multiple.
Okay.
I just didn't know that
I
was multiple. But you know, people aren't born multiple.
Right.
So you know, somewhere in the years like infancy, I started to split.
Okay. Somebody's researching that and trying to figure out how that happens, when that happens. Yeah.
Well, they do. They do know that, you know, I mean, multiple personality is the most extreme form of PTSD. So it's post-traumatic stress disorder, but the more severe the original trauma is, the more you have to go to extremes to cope with it.
To deal with it.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, regular listeners to this show, of which there may be some, know that every week I have a special question, and we have a sponsor every week for the question. So I usually talk about the sponsor first, and the sponsor for the special question this week is actually the Canada Chamber of Commerce. Now, they have this phrase, the voice of Canadian business, which is they've trademarked, like somebody else is going to steal that. Great phrase, the voice of Canadian business. But anyway, the Canada Chamber of Commerce, they don't have anything to say today about the issues with steel and aluminum tariffs and fighting with the U.S., but they would like to remind us that their Ottawa office is moving. And as of today, June 1st, they're in a new location, which is 1700-275 Slater Street in Ottawa. And if you would like the postal code, it's K1P5H9. So if you're in Ottawa and you were thinking about going to the Canadian Chamber of Commerce, please take note.
Thank you.
They're in a different place. Now, here's the question. For many years, I have been doing this thing where I have given permission to some family and friends that they can hit me in the face with a pie or squirt seltzer anytime. And the reason is I realized that it's a thing that everyone loves to do, but it's forbidden because it's aggressive and it's, you know, and I said, let's take that out of it. I'm going to give you permission. You know, you can throw it with love. I'm going to receive it with love. You know, do it anytime. It's always okay. How bad could it be? And it's been great. But you're going to do this. You're going to give permission to one person, living or dead, real or imaginary, anyone you want that can hit you in the face with a pie. Who would you like to be that person?
So I'm taking my partner off the list because it's too easy.
Okay.
And, it would have to be Idris Elba.
Idris Elba. Yeah, tell me a little bit about that.
I love him so much. I have a huge talent crush on him, and he's so fun. You know, he did this thing where you could buy like a lottery ticket to have Valentine's Day with him, and he did commercials with kids.
Okay.
And there was this little boy who he said, so, you know, do you want to get a ticket for a date with me? And the boy said, well, you're not a girl. And Idris Elba got a little flustered and said, hey, man, love is love. And the boy said, well, I don't love you. And it was just the whole way he handled it and the whole way he handled the kids was phenomenal. To be in a room with Idris Elba, he can hit me in the face with a pie.
All right. And yeah, where would you, Matt, now let's unpack, where do you think that would happen? Or where would you like it to happen? Or I don't know. What's in your head? What do you see?
In the UK, in a restaurant, that's what I see.
Okay.
Chocolate pie, preferably.
Chocolate pie. All right. Whipped cream or not whipped cream?
I don't care.
You don't have a preference for whipped cream?
I just really like chocolate.
Okay. Really like chocolate. All right. Well, I can edit that part out. Because I've done it now so many times, I made these cards that, and I have a little, it's kind of like a movement. Here, you can, why don't you read that. Go ahead, read that out loud for the audience at home.
Pie yourself free. It's always okay to hit me in the face with a pie or squirt seltzer anytime and without warning. Pass this card along to friends and family. Experience the sublime service in receiving a pie with love and joy in your heart. Follow Pie Yourself Free on Facebook and Twitter.
Yeah. So, I personally have been hit with pies a bunch of times. If this sounds interesting to you, I would say, yeah, do it. It's not open season for anybody.
Right.
It's a permission only for obvious reasons. But it really makes those other people happy. And, you know, it's people that love you, and then they laugh, and they help you clean off your glasses, and somebody buys you a free drink. I mean, you know.
So I should be brave and not say Idris Elba, which is unlikely ever to happen. So.
Well, that was just the question because, you know.
Yeah. It's,
but, yeah, if you do it, let me know what happens.
I will, yeah.
Because I'm curious. Here's another question I'd like to ask. You have a somewhat quirky sleeping or bedtime ritual. What is it?
I'm like, did you know that?
I'm the host of the show. There's a lot of things I know.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I live in Boston, and it's cold there. So we have what we call the Bucky Parade. And we take these fake hot water bottles that are full of buckwheat.
Uh-huh.
And we put them in the microwave, and we have like six of them.
Okay.
And regular hot water bottles.
Okay, with actual water.
With actual hot water. Yeah. And we have, my partner and I do this together. Have you done the Buc-ee's? No, I'm doing the Buc-ee's. And then we pack them in around each other before we go to sleep. So.
All winter long.
All winter long.
And how many total water bottles are there now? Because you got six buckwheat.
Well, we own probably four hot water bottles and six or eight of the buckwheat hot water bottles.
All right. Now, some hot water bottles, I just want to say this for the folks listening at home because it's kind of a safety issue. Some of them in the cap where you screw it closed have some metal in there just so it retains the seal.
Yeah, and you don't put a hot water bottle in the microwave.
No. So you have to be careful with hot water bottles in the microwave for that one particular reason. But these buckwheat ones, they're sewn up, right? They're cloth.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. And they're sewn up and the buckwheat is all inside. So that you can, and there's enough moisture in there that they get warm.
No moisture, but they get hot. I'm the two people in my relationship, I'm the one who's always cold.
Okay.
So we go through the Bucky hot water bottles because I cook them too long and they burn in the microwave. So.
All right. So, well, see, I like asking this question because it's always something. Now, the last thing I like to do on this show, before we say goodbye, that's really the last thing, is to anagram stuff. And so anagrams are where you take the letters of a word or phrase and then you rearrange them, you use them all, and it spells other things, potentially. I've done them, so it's not a test. But the question is, like, if we do this, are some new meanings revealed? Do we learn something?
Right? It's kind of right.
Like, so here's an example. I anagrammed your name, Lirilyn K, and I got this. Reread that one.
Nearly leaky.
Now, you laughed, so I don't know what that means. Does that mean something to you, nearly leaky?
Well, yes, it could mean something to me. So,
is it something you want to say on this show?
I mean not anything obvious, but I think of it as things that leak out, right? So, nearly leaky, as in nearly unfiltered. Sometimes, in terms of what I say, especially when I'm tired, I say anything that comes into my head. And I think I'll go with that.
Yeah, I thought about your mind, and yeah, that things must leak in and out of there all the time. Now, Caitlin Inglis is the director of your show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I didn't get a lot of interesting things out of your name, or I tried Trump refugees and what, I didn't get a lot of stuff. So I did her. So I don't know her. Caitlin Inglis anagrams to this.
Italic linings.
I just think I liked the idea of a lining of something that was in italics.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, what do you see when I say that?
Well, she has a dance background.
Uh-huh.
So I see the italic lines kind of moving and becoming figures that are dancing.
And if you say dance, then I say, well, there's like crinoline and satin, and those things are italics,
right.
Fabrics. So,
yeah. Swishes and
yes,
that.
Yeah. All right. See, there you go. So it actually made sense. Italic, Caitlin Inglis, italic linings. All right. Now, there's a couple more here. I'm not sure if they're useful, but that's what we're trying to figure out. Now, I anagrammed a Women in Film Award, and I got this.
Rwanda Mime Inflow.
Rwanda Mime Inflow. Yeah, I don't know. I've never been to Rwanda. Have you?
No.
Do we know if there are a lot of mimes there?
That's what it is, right? Mimes are immigrating to Rwanda.
Or they could be Rwandan mimes immigrating out to someplace.
Mm. I have not, you know, that makes me want to Google it. Are there mimes in Rwanda?
And are they sea mimes or land mimes? I just thought of that. That was awful. All right, Women in Film Award. Here's the very last one.
Onward Minimal Few. Well, that's so, it's kind of dead on, right? Well, the Women in Film Award is about moving certain women forward.
Yes.
Right? And, you know, when I think about, like, there's 4,000 women who applied and 12 win, that's the minimal few. It's, yeah.
That's where I went too. Yeah, the Women in Film Award, that's why we're doing it. Onward, minimal few. There's not enough. We got to push them forward. Yeah.
Right.
So, anyway,
exactly.
I like that this is not some freaky esoteric stuff. This is science. You know, you put certain letters in and certain things come out, and there are meanings there. It's like a mathematical function. Kind of. You're not. That's the way my mind works. So, you know, that's all. So, many Trump refugees in one body at the Broadwater Studio Theater, 1078 Lillian Way. And this starts immediately, right?
It starts on Sunday.
Sunday, yeah. All right. Sunday the 3rd of June.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, we'll probably hear this after Sunday the 3rd of June. But you have four more shows through the month
right.
of June.
Yeah.
Fantastic. All right. And then you're going to take it someplace else? You did it in Boston?
I'm talking about Providence, Rhode Island.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, and we will see.
That sounds good. All right. Well, I would like to thank my guest, writer-performer Lyrilyn Kay. Yes, go see her play Many Trump Refugees in One Body at the Hollywood Fringe Festival. For tickets, go to hollywoodfringe.org. If you would like to buy a Comedy Death Star hashtag coffee mug, I actually have sold a couple. Email me at comedydeathstar@acsdigital.tv. Our theme music was written and performed by Dean Mermel. You've been listening to Comedy Death Star, the official podcast of Actors Comedy Studio, right here in Hollywood, USA. I'm your host, Denzel Myers. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. Thanks, Lyrilyn.
Thanks, Denzel.